Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to the Extra Inch podcast. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
How you doing, mate?
I'm good. I got you all to myself tonight.
Yeah, no, Nathan, although you'll hear him later. So Nathan is recording a preview of the Manchester City game with Nico, who's been on the podcast before. He's one of Nathan's friends. He's very knowledgeable, knows his stuff, and he's a big City fan. So you've got that to look forward to. But first, you've got us two idiots. And, well, let's just see what we know about City. So did you catch their first game of the season against West Ham, Bardi?
Yeah, I did. It's a strange one watching Man City. They haven't really evolved or changed. They just remain really good. There's been a few things that are different, but on the whole, it's still the same nucleus of the team. It's the same system. It's everything else. And they're still a very good team.
And you just mentioned to me just now the reemergence of Kyle Walker, who obviously got an assist, but it wasn't just the assist. He was making those runs almost constantly, particularly in the first half. I thought he made some really penetrative runs and showed his pace that used to be a regular thing at Spurs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he taught Aaron Cresswell, who once upon a time was touted as was a well-respected and like a prospect fullback. He absolutely tore him to pieces. And he's just his energy and his speed. It seems to have recovered that kind of the Spurs speed that we used to associate him with. And he was playing very much in a kind of an old-fashioned fullback role. And he looked great.
So perhaps that, you said there was no evolution for City, but perhaps that is something that they'll do more of this year. Perhaps they'll go back to the kind of the old fullback style, whereas, as we know, last season, fullbacks would typically tuck in the City and thicken up the midfield area. Maybe now they've got Rodri, who's a bit younger. Maybe they think he can patrol that midfield area by himself. I guess that remains to be seen. But the main thing to note with City at the moment is Aguero didn't play against West Ham. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, because on one hand, you know, maybe he's not fit and firing. On the other hand, maybe he's going to be totally fresh and desperate to get back in the team and retain his place. So it's hard to know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing or not. And the other thing to note, I suppose, is that Bernardo Silva didn't play against West Ham either. I thought he was arguably their best player aside from Sterling last season. He was absolutely exceptional. And he's a player that scares me a bit. He caused us problems in numerous games last year. What do you make of City's main attacking players? Silva, Sterling. Who scares you the most?
Yeah, I mean it's the same crowd. Sterling is another one of those. He's just unbelievable in front of goal. His positioning more than anything else. He always knows exactly where to be. I thought Mahrez looked interesting as well, because he hasn't really settled at City, but he looked dangerous. And yeah, Bernardo Silva is a fantastic player, and I've got a funny feeling he'll be back. I'm not sure why Aguero didn't start, because he had the same kind of summer as Jesus. I'm not sure. It's just Guardiola just shuffling his pack, just testing players out.
Mahrez is such an interesting one because he hasn't played a great deal at City, but whenever he does play, he seems to score. He seems to do something, and that's a really impressive trait to have in a squad player who can just slip in and hit the ground running each time. And he's still he's almost like unparalleled in the way that he isolates a defender and beats him. He makes it look so easy. He's a real talent, and obviously he would get in at pretty much every other club, but at City, he has to really wait for his chances and almost plays like a rotation. But, you know, at Spurs, we'd love someone like Mahrez. He's a great player. So one of the things that scares me is Raheem Sterling potentially playing on the left up against Kyle Walker-Peters. We saw what he did to Trippier. It was the game it was the VAR game. Sterling essentially was involved in three early goals by tearing Trippier to shreds. Do you fear for Walker-Peters?
No, not really. I think that Man City, the second leg game, I think it was more to do with our midfield was really lightweight that evening. And they kind of, De Bruyne had the run of the park. It was Wanyama and I think Sissoko for a small bit. But yeah, we didn't have any kind of control. I think now if we play the two of Ndombele and alongside Winks or Sissoko, I think we'll have a little bit more stability there. Kyle Walker-Peters, you know, it's a big test for him. But Foyth stood up well to Sterling, so you can marshal Sterling quite well. The interesting thing is you've got Zinchenko who's on this incredible winning streak at the moment. So
yeah,
it'd be quite nice to end that, to get rid of it.
Absolutely. And I suppose one thing we can say about Walker-Peters is City aren't going to be angling lots of high balls his way because, you know, Sterling's even shorter than he is. So he won't be losing area duels. So that's something. Yeah, I wish him all the best because the last thing he needs right now is a horror show against a player as good as Raheem Sterling. So fingers crossed that won't happen and we can actually pose a threat of our own. I think, you know, we've got attacking players that can trouble them even without Son. Do you feel like City's defence can be got at still?
Yeah, I think so. But the way they protect their defence is amazing. Pellegrini was complaining about it at the weekend. Their tactical fouling has got even worse. I mean, you wouldn't call it... It's not worse as in the sense that it's vicious or dangerous. But Rodri especially, he was just pulling people down like in the opposition half. So miles away from his own goal. And eventually a referee is going to have to stand up to this because Rodri's committing tiny fouls, which on their own are never worth... Not worth a yellow card, but if you start counting them up, the referee needs to start booking. And I think if he does that, then we can get at the defence because they won't be able to break that first wave of the counter.
Absolutely. And as we know, they play John Stones at the back. I'm a massive fan of John Stones, but there's no doubt he takes some risks. And let's hope that he takes one of those risks against Spurs and particularly against Harry Kane, who looked in absolute fine fettle for us in the first game.
I think John Stones, it was Lucas that got after John Stones in the Champions League. And it was from Lucas into, or was it Laporte anyway, one of them. That I think it would be Lucas that would be tasked with closing them down. And in the game that we lost 1-0 to them after the Champions League match, we had a lot of joy with quick balls over the top to either Lucas or Son that day. So, you know, it's a big test for us. I've got a funny feeling that we might be able to do something.
Oh, I would absolutely love that to be the case. Let's hand over to Nathan and Nico and find out what they think of the game.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Oh, Oi, oi, it's your boy, and I'm joined by my boy, Manchester City fan, respected writer of multiple topics, including football, and famed goals disliker, Nico Morales. Nico, how you doing, dude?
I'm doing okay. That's quite the intro. I appreciate that.
So, Nico, tell us a little about the signings that City have made over this summer.
Well, I think probably the biggest one is the central midfielder or central defensive midfielder, if you want to call him that, Rodri. That's probably the one that everybody's a little bit more focused on just because he plays such an important position. And there's been a lot of writing, whether it be from myself or other writers, about how important that position is, not just to Guardiola, but just to Manchester City in general and their success over the past couple seasons. I think Cancelo is a great signing, and he's obviously a great player, and he's really talented. But in terms of what he'll do tactically, I don't think it comes anywhere close to how much the position that Rodri will be filling in for and playing and has been playing is to, you know, Guardiola and Manchester City's success.
Yeah, Cancelo definitely confused me a little. He seems like quite a sort of an A-grade signing for a place where you're already fairly strong. Do you think that you could see Walker getting edged out of the team?
I think the idea with Walker is that as he gets older, the idea is to maybe play him more as a central defender. Yeah. I think when you guys had me on the extra inch last year, we talked a little bit about the piece I wrote for Fansided, where I spoke about just how important Kyle Walker is to Manchester City and why he is. And it basically boiled down to he allows the formation to evolve without actually making any substitutions. They can change shape pretty drastically because of his positional versatility. And that's such a strong thing. I would say this past season, that was probably where it was at its strongest, because he is a willing, capable, and very able sort of flank dominant right back. But he's also, as we saw for England in the World Cup and obviously Manchester City, a very willing and able and capable central defender, especially within a three. I don't necessarily trust his abilities within a two, which really hasn't come into question. But within a three, he's a very proficient player. So I think the idea is just to have, you know, because we saw it within the Guardiola era, there was that summer where they offloaded like four or five players that were simply too old. And I think City Football Group, just in general, Guardiola or not, don't want to be in a similar position where they're paying, you know, hand over foot because they've mismanaged the age of the squad in such a significant way. So getting a player that, like you said, is an A plus buy now for the future, essentially, even though he'll find his way into the team now, is just, I think, a bit of squad management, as well as, you know, to deal with Walker's getting a bit on in age. We want to rotate him a bit. He's so important to the team, all these things. So I think it has a little bit of everything in terms of why was he bought at this point in time.
Do you think that Rodri counts as an upgrade on Fernandinho or just a younger model?
I think it's an interesting question because, you know, I've been in the midst of writing something for a number of weeks now about him. I think Fernandinho is excellent because of his sort of meta ability, in the sense that he fits the Premier League, you know, and the thing that maybe you'll never see, but is certainly within the Google Doc that I'm writing. The players that have occupied that position in Guardiola's iterations at Barcelona and Bayern Munich, they've almost sort of had hints of the tactical environment around them, right? So when Barcelona's style was mainlined into La Liga, Busquets had the pauses and the cultured passing and the thinking behind how the ball is distributed, along with other players that he grew up with. When he was at Bayern Munich, it was Xabi Alonso, and he had a little bit of the, you know, he has that long ball ability, and it's super transitional, and it fit a very press heavy Bundesliga. And with Fernandinho, we all know the Premier League is a lot more physical. The players talk about it, the coaches talk about it. So I think in that sense, Fernandinho has been very adept at, you know, the infamous tactical fouling and this idea of physicality within the league. So I think in that sense, there's really no better player in that position that excels with that skill set. To my estimation, I think there's a level of that where Rodri is echoing that, and he's simply younger because he is a very physical player. But I also do think, as I sort of mentioned in the piece, City were in for Jorginho, and it was a tacked on thing. It seemed like it was a for sure thing. And I think that's almost a complete departure from Fernandinho. So you kind of scratch your head and say, well, if they want the physicality, if that has been the thing that has made the position so good in the Premier League, then why would they want a departure from that? And I think that's where Rodri has a little bit of both, because I think there's sort of a quote unquote meta value that Rodri can have and Jorginho can have, in the sense that they understand where possession needs to go so that they distribute it there, and it's less likely for possession to be misused or lost in an area where it might be pressed. Whereas, you know, a lesser player or a player that doesn't think about those things as much will distribute the ball adequately from a technical perspective, but won't have that understanding of the system, won't have that understanding of the momentum and flow of the game that a Rodri or I think a Jorginho is probably the best in the world at that, what those players might have.
The first question that we asked you last time you came on was, do you think City can be even better than last season? I'd like to ask you that same question again.
It's a difficult question, because, you know, you asked me that and I don't even remember what my answer was, but they were 2 points lesser this season. They were basically the same in terms of underlying numbers. It's difficult to imagine such consistency. I do believe in this team more than any other, just because I think tactically, from like a sort of football physics perspective, none of what they're really doing is like a gimmick, right? And you and I have discussed this a number of times. Like, Antonio Conte's success in the Premier League was very much based off of, he saw a universal tactical trend that he could exploit by introducing the shifting wingbacks and the transitional play and all these things. When people caught wind of that, he didn't really have an ability to transition his team past that, because it was sort of like this is a hot trend at the moment, but it won't be in a year. Whereas Guardiola has played his teams very similarly over the course of his entire career. There are tactical adjustments for the league and for the players and for the circumstances, but generally speaking, the physics of it, the general system, is very similar to its past iterations, and just kind of continues to elaborate upon those things. So in terms of, I look at that question and I say, there's only one place to go, and that's down. City had a 100-point season now 2 seasons ago, and it's very difficult to imagine that they continue that kind of success, simply because football's a war of attrition. Players get tired, coaches get tired of each other, relationships start to sour, people want more money. There's an element of successful teams that almost relies on players and circumstances that lie on the very edges, right? I think if you look at the Bayern Munich team that won the treble a couple of years ago, they had a very good starting 11, and then they had players on the fringes that were okay because of the circumstances at the time with being on the fringes, but their fringe contributions made that team what it was. A year later, those circumstances are different because they feel like they have justified a greater place in the team. Those relationships start to sour again and go in different directions because of the passage of time. And so the same thing happens with any team. So I guess, in a roundabout way to answer your question, do I think City can get better? I think it's an accomplishment enough to just stay the same. You know, they've historically been one of the best Premier League teams of all time. If they can continue to push out the kind of attacking and defensive performances that they have over the past 2 seasons, there's no doubt in my mind that they'll win the league. You know, how close Liverpool ran it last season, as much as I give them credit for, was a massive overperformance in terms of a points total. Maybe not massive, but large overperformance. So if they continue doing what they've been doing, I think they'll be fine. And that's kind of the real question.
So you talked about there about like the breakdown of relationships over time and everything. Famously, Guardiola, when he left Barcelona, he said that that he can no longer motivate the team once you continually win everything. You know, there are no more worlds left to conquer thing. Do you think that is possibly true of City? And if not, do you think that City's lack of success in the Champions League is potentially a sort of a weird positive there?
In what sense?
It were in the motivation to continue to sort of like fight,
still
and improve
something to
exist. Yeah, exactly. And right. Incidentally, in the meantime, you're dominating the league year after year.
Yes and no. I think, again, John wrote that great piece about Guardiola, and he used that quote about, you know, no worlds left to conquer and all this, that, and the other. And there is an element of that, I think, at Manchester City, where there is something left. But at the same time, they're not going to change their style of football, right? So we talked about this on a podcast a while ago, and we said that I think you can say the same thing about a lot of teams in the sense that as great as Klopp has been and is, and it is so much of an accomplishment what he's done with Borussia Dortmund and now what he's done with Liverpool actually winning it, his style of football is the best, I think, to win a cup competition because it's so transition heavy and it's so adaptive to different kinds of teams. But at the same time, if a Guardiola team hits the right draws and gets the right teams at the right stages, there's nothing to suggest that they couldn't win the Champions League as well. It's just kind of a randomness thing. And we know how reliant the Champions League and Champions League success is on that kind of randomness. So while I think there is a material obsession from the City Football Group and maybe from the players and maybe even Guardiola to simply achieve that from a maybe academic or ideological point of view, I think he can leave City now or maybe at the end of this year and say, it just wasn't us. You know what I mean? I think there's an element of you just chuck it up to a different day and say, you know, that it isn't, you did your best, you tried your best. It's not like he's going to go Mourinho or he's going to go Klopp and completely alter the tactics of the team to win one trophy that's extremely random. He can't even do that. You know, he doesn't really know a different way to play. So I think in that sense, yes, there's a material concern, especially from his employers, to win that trophy. But from an ideological perspective, you know, he's talked about it in press conferences where he says, you know, I have won games that I didn't think I should win, and I have lost games that I definitely thought I should win. And that's kind of what football is. It's very random. So, yeah.
So I tweeted out a thread today, I don't know if you saw it, talking about how I feel like Pochettino sort of has an ace up his sleeve for a couple of years at least, with regards in how to approach City. And I feel like he sort of spent that last year in the Champions League quarterfinals, which obviously worked out very well for Spurs at the time. But I think now that Guardiola has seen Pochettino's best possible method for handling games against City, which is this sort of
which
medium
is in
block,
your mind,
which is a medium block with a focus on turnovers in central midfield and at fullback and attacking the space in behind the left back, regardless of who that is. I think that now that card has been shown, that Guardiola has an upper hand. First off, do you agree with that idea?
Yeah, I definitely agree that is the best way to go about controlling City, is to force them into those pressing traps in midfield and go forth from there.
Okay, and do you think that having seen the specific ways that Pochettino and his team go about achieving those things, do you think that Guardiola will be able to react and adapt to that situation?
Yes and no. I think if that were the case, if the logic that you're presenting was 100% true, he would have already adapted, because as we know, Liverpool used that. You know, you wrote about it in your article for Fansided, which was very good, that, you know, the team that holds the tactical key to destroying Manchester City is Liverpool, because they have that tactical blueprint out there. It's just whether you're able to do it. And obviously Spurs showed an ability, a unique ability to be able to do that. The thing is, the reason I also say yes is because now with adding Cancelo, with adding Rodri, with adding, you know, Gabriel Jesus is playing more, he could, in theory, and maybe Mendy being more fit and, you know, the center back situation being so plentiful as it is, he could, in theory, employ a different shape, a wider shape, one that exposes that kind of dependence on central midfield traps a little bit more if he's going to be put in those situations. He hasn't in the past, or he has tried and it hasn't necessarily worked because of another reason or another tactical gimmick that another coach has employed. But I think there's always an ability to sort of, for those two Guardiola and Poch, or Guardiola and Klopp, or the three of them, to go back and forth in terms of a tactical chess match. And that's what makes it so interesting. So I think, you know, Poch has shown immense ability to implement that very difficult strategy with a lesser group of players. He obviously has Giovanni Lo Celso now and Ndombele, which is only going to make things easier for him. But yeah, it'll when they do play each other, and if it does happen to be in a knockout competition once again, it'll be an extremely interesting thing to watch.
Awesome. You mentioned sort of the embarrassment of riches, specifically at centre back there. Do you have any thoughts on how you think that will be handled this season?
In terms of the centre back specifically?
Yeah.
I think John and I were talking about it the other day in the DM, and you were kind of witness to it, but I suggested that I thought, you know, Nicolas Otamendi would have minutes that were comparable to the other central defenders on the roster. And I wasn't necessarily wrong. He had over 1,000 minutes just in the Premier League alone, and probably had more minutes in the Champions League and the League Cups and whatever. But I think that will continue. That's what we saw at Bayern Munich. That's where we saw the issues with players like Schweinsteiger and all these guys. Like, I think the capitalistic mentality of agents, players, and the game in and of itself is sort of inextricably opposed to a rotational squad. But the calculus and the format of modern football requires and almost demands for a rotation like team, because a team like Manchester City is competing, what, in 4 or 5 different competitions, you know? So there needs to be a level rotation. There needs to be, there can't really be a consistent 11. And I think it's funny to kind of see how it goes up against the traditional commentary values that you hear from, you know, the Wilkins and the old Arsenal boys on the commentary. Because we, I think, as a footballing public, have such a attachment invested into the best 11, and you put your best 11 out there in the Premier League every weekend. And, you know, to say that about Manchester City, that might always be true because they have so many good players, but it will and should be extremely rotational as the season goes on because of the nature of how they're looking to compete. That being said, I think there's an element of, specifically with the center backs and how important central defenders are, not only for Manchester City, but in the game as a whole today. John Stones offers something different from Nicolas Otamendi in terms of how they progress the ball. Aymeric Laporte offers something else. You know, you have such a variety in how different players play, and with positions that were not as important before becoming more important now, it's almost like you have a playmaker at central defender. That's how important they are in progressing the ball. So I think there's an element of that as well. You know, you saw John Stones in specific games against Liverpool because he has an understanding of where the ball should move and why. And you saw Nicolas Otamendi against maybe different people because he has a specific progression style that worked better against maybe an Everton or, you know, a Wolves or whoever. So it's interesting to see how it pans out, but I think my bet is for it to be more transitional this season, or more rotational.
I definitely think that's very interesting, and there's certainly like a perhaps increasingly old-fashioned belief amongst the punditocracy that you should have a centre-back partnership that should be your go-to partnership, and the strength of their defending is based on the relationship that these two men have in
right.
the football context. And I think that as we move into this more proactive era of football, centre-backs can be married rather than to one another, but to their role within a system. And so they're less reliant on knowing the trends and habits of their centre-back partner. And so as a result, you don't need to be rolling out the exact same two blokes every week. And then if one of them is injured or suspended, everything falls apart. And certainly that's definitely relevant to Pochettino and this very current situation in which Vertonghen missed out not only in the starting 11, but in the entire squad last weekend. And yeah, I definitely think that there's occasions where you want Davinson Sanchez for his particular skills, for his incredible recovery pace, although that didn't work out for Villa's goal, but never mind, you get the general idea.
Right, yeah.
But then if Vertonghen is missing out this weekend, I will certainly be worried about that. Nico, right. Thank you very much for coming on. You mentioned you may well have some pieces, City relevant pieces, coming out in the near future. I'm looking forward to those. I will definitely be reading and sharing those. Anything else left to add or plug before you go?
I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Brilliant. Thank you, mate.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark, production. Thanks to Barney for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at DavyShambles and his SoundCloud D Lindner. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.